not many things I've found in life that have allowed me to dream quite as much as running has, and it's awesome.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 497, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that this episode is once again sponsored by the good folks over at Knuckle Lights. If you're running in the dark, and this time of year, it's most likely going to be dark. Most of the day, the days are getting short, and they're only getting shorter. And that means that the night is extending into the mornings and creeping into the evenings. So whether you run before work, after work, or just about any other time, except for the middle of the day, it's probably going to be dark. And having a good light is a good safety feature, not only so you can see where you're going, but also so any cars that may be approaching can see you. And especially if you live in kind of some of the northern cold areas, a lot of drivers aren't looking for runners because it's quote unquote too cold to be out there running. And we all know, I mean, it's never too cold to get out there and run. So if you're going to be out there when the visibility is not so hot, you need a light. And it just helps you to be safe. And knuckle lights are definitely my my choice, my preferred method of lighting the path. So if you want to see and be seen, you need to check out knuckle lights. And you can get a pair at most of the neighborhood type of running stores. A lot of places have them. And you can also always check out knucklelights.com. And if you get them from there, make sure you let them know that you heard about them here on Diz Runs Radio. So now let's go ahead and get started with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is someone that knows a thing or two about balancing running and a busy life. Her two daughters and their endlessly busy schedules, because they're teenagers, so, you know, busy life and a busy mom because of it, are more than enough to keep her busy. Add working in, you know, full time to the mix, and she definitely has to be intentional about how and when she trains in order to make running fit into her life. But the structure and the effort has definitely paid off, as she's gone from a 4-hour marathoner in 2009 to a PR in 2016 of 2:58. So she's knocked an hour off of her time in just over 7 years, I guess, if you do the math on that, which is pretty incredible. And somehow, in the midst of all this busyness and craziness that she's got going on in her life, she's found time to squeeze in a chat with little old me into her busy schedule. So it's a pleasure to be able to welcome, or to be able to go a few easy miles today and welcome Miss Amy Fite to the show. So thanks for joining us, Amy. Appreciate you taking the time today.
Well, thank you for having me today, Denny. I'm excited to talk running just like any other runner would be.
Yeah, definitely. And guys, if you want to connect with Amy at some point, you know, from listening to what we had to talk today, you have questions about anything we say or anything like that, a couple places on social media, a good place to do that are Instagram and Twitter. And it's the same handle both places, which always makes everything convenient. And it's just her name, at Amy Fite, and that's AmyFeit. Amy Fite on Instagram and Twitter. And as always, we'll have those things linked up, and anything else we talk about that makes sense to link to in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/497. So now that all the housekeeping and all that good stuff is out of the way, Amy, it's the part of the show that's consistent from one episode to the next, and it's the introductory question. It's the same question that everybody gets. Simple question, but sometimes simple answer, sometimes the exact opposite of a simple answer, but it's just a fun way to start the chat, and that is to just simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Well, hands down, it's the marathon distance. I love the marathon. I'm not sure what it is about that race distance, but nothing else really compares to the challenge of running the 26.2 for me. And maybe that's why I love it. I know I've heard other people comment on how they like the half distance better because it's not as big of a commitment mm-hmm. for training. And I think I just relish that big commitment to the training because, you know, I mean, you could go out and run a 5K pretty decently on minimal training. You go out and run a half on some you know, a little bit of training, but you can't fake the marathon, and you have to respect that distance. And I find it motivating that you have to respect that distance. And aside from that, I love the training. I love mm-hmm. the long run. I love the dedication it takes to be able to train for that distance. I love the hard workouts that go with it. I really just love everything about it. And I also love that you can train hard and see those dividends pay off in that race. You know, as an example of, you know, my first marathon, just getting through it in 4 hours and then just being able to continually chip away at new goals and see those big jumps. So, it's fun. And then also, I'm not a huge fan of the gut-wrenching 5K pain as compared to the long, drawn-out pain of a marathon. So give me a marathon any day over a 5K.
Yeah, I'm definitely right there with you. And, it's always silly to me to even think it and let alone to say it. And it always puts a smile on my face when other people say it, too, about how, you know, as much as the 5K hurts, it's over in, 20 minutes or 19 minutes or 22 minutes, whatever it is. I mean, you're going hard, but it's done in not that long, whatever your pace might be. When you compare that to the marathon, and it's like, yeah, you might be feeling good for 18 or 20 miles in the marathon, but at some point, if you're pushing over 26.2 miles, like, it's going to start to hurt, and it's going to hurt longer than it could ever hurt during the 5K. So it's just always ironic to me. And I'm saying, I mean, I totally agree with you. I'd rather do a marathon than a 5K as well, but it's just, I can never help but smile whenever I think that or hear somebody say that about how, 5K hurts too bad, so I'd rather run a marathon, because it's just, right. it's ridiculous, but it's true. I mean, it's just it how is. It is.
But I'll be the first to admit that it never fails at some point during a marathon where I say, I am never doing this again. This hurts so much. This is stupid. Why do I keep doing this? But for some reason, I get done with the race and I keep coming back. I say it's kind of like having a baby. You forget that pain and you're ready to do it all over again a little while later. So it's fun.
Yeah, definitely. How'd you get into our crazy sport of going out the door and running until, to whenever, like whatever the distance is, but might be. But how did you get into running?
Sure. So I did run in high school from my seventh grade year to my sophomore year. I was a pretty decent runner. I was always the top runner on my small school's cross country team. And then I was also lucky enough to be part of a 4x4 team that made it to our Minnesota State meet my freshman year. My junior and senior year, I actually attended college full time and didn't go to high school at all. So I got a bit disconnected from high school sports and didn't run those last 2 years. And I'll fully admit, one of my best friends, who is still my best friend to this day, was not a runner, and her after school schedule looked way more fun than than going for a run in the freezing cold afternoon, each afternoon. So I ran a little bit in high school. After that, I didn't really run much at all for the next 10 years. I had my girls in my early 20s, and it wasn't until my mid to late 20s that I came back to running. And the way it kind of came about was my husband, who is full-time National Guard, he was on a deployment, and he came back from that deployment in great running shape. He had taken up running while he was deployed, and came back and did one of our local 10Ks, and I went out to cheer for him, and my eyes were just opened. I mean, I was not aware that there was this whole road running scene, and the competitor in me was, like, I want to be a part of this. So, that's kind of where the seed got planted.
Go ahead.
But I did start doing a little bit of running there, but I actually had in my 20s or just before I started taking up running, I actually had some really bad back issues. So like bulge discs and sciatica. And, so that kind of took me out for a little bit. And I finally got so frustrated that I was so out of shape. And so I felt so debilitated that I finally got to the point where I'm like, I am just going to go run. I'm just going to try it. And I'll never, ever forget that first run back, Denny. It was so sad. It was, I'll never forget, 0.9 miles. So not even a mile. And I got back in and I thought I was going to die. I thought my lungs were going to collapse. I couldn't feel my legs. And that's, you know, really where it all started. And obviously the running got easier. Mm-hmm. My back actually got better through this process. And I, you know, I think it was due to the strengthening of my core. Mm. And then I hopped in my first 10K, the same one that I watched my husband do in 2008. And then the next race I did was the Twin Cities Marathon, my first marathon a year later. So probably not the most intelligent progression going from 10K to marathon. But I had always, you know, ever since that seed had been planted with the road running racing, I looked and I'm like, I want to do a marathon, you know, mm-hmm. at some point. So I checked that one off my list and I've been running ever since.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, as per usual around these parts, you know, I ask a question and somebody answers it, and there's like six follow up questions that I want to ask. So then I got to try to figure out which question is you know, the first one, and if maybe the only one, because some usually it leads to the next follow up, you know, and as the progression continues. But when you got back and you know, the first, or I guess the second race, you know, from the 10K to the marathon. What were your expectations of that first marathon? Did you have any idea what you were getting yourself into, other than like, yeah, I'm going to go out and run and it's going to be 26 miles or you know, how is that first experience at that distance? What was that like for you?
Boy, thinking back, you know, I had prepared pretty well for that first marathon. And I wasn't, of course, I was a little concerned or wasn't sure what to expect in those last 6 miles or that last 10K, because, of course, I had never done anything over 20. But I was pretty confident going into it that I could make it to the finish line. But still, just crossing that finish line felt really, really good. And then, you know, as soon as I got across that finish line, I, you know, realized I can do it. But now the question is can I do it faster?
You mentioned earlier the competitiveness, and it sounds like, I mean, as soon as you finished that first marathon, like with that question being, you know, can I do it faster, that obviously the itch had been scratched and you were ready to go. You know, but you also said earlier that after every race, it seems like it's like, oh, I'm never going to do this again, and it always come back. Was there ever a thought of it being one and done, or was it really like, you know, and maybe trying to scratch a competitive itch at a shorter distance or at a longer distance or whatever, or was it always like from the get go after that first race of like, this is my thing right now?
No, it was always going to be to continue to do marathons, because once, you know, I did do a half, I think, that following spring after my first marathon, and it just wasn't as satisfying of a challenge. And, you know, like I said earlier, I really do love the training. So, I mean, it just only made sense for me to continue to train for the marathon and keep chipping away at that goal.
Gotcha. So, well, go ahead.
And obviously that next goal, I think, quickly became qualifying for Boston.
Right.
And it felt like a pipe dream at that point. I'm like, oh, probably, especially because I think during that time from my first marathon to when I qualified, it was originally my qualifying time was 3:40, and then they cut it down to 3:35. Right. And I thought, oh, well, there goes that. I'll probably never hit a 3:35.
Yeah, famous last words. And then we all kind of, you know, from the intro, know that the 3:35 was is now not the issue, but at the time, I mean, you were a squeaker. You made it in just and back, you know, way back when, you know, three or four years ago, when you could pretty much, you know, as long as you qualified, you pretty much got in, as opposed to now where, you know, a squeaker is you got to be 2.5 or 3 minutes under the time. What was it like crossing that finish line of the race when you had qualified?
That was the most painful last mile of a marathon I think I've ever experienced. I think I looked at my watch at mile 25, and In my foggy haze, I was able to do the math and realize that if I really pushed hard, I might be able to still get that Boston qualifying time. So I ran so hard in that last mile. I remember coming up the home stretch, so to say, where I could see the finish line, and both my calves were cramping, and you know, I must have looked just terribly rough in those last couple hundred meters. But I wanted that Boston qualifier so badly that, I mean, I was just pushing with everything I got. And so I get across the finish line, and of course, you know, I ended up qualifying. My time was 3:34:56, and so. You know, seeing, and I think my watch said, you know, 58 or something like that when I looked. And so there was a period of time right after that race where I wasn't even sure if I made the qualifying time or not, just because it was so close. I'm like, did I start my watch early? Did I start my watch late? And right. So it took a little time. And then finally I was able to look at the official results, and, you know, it was kind of surreal and unbelievable at the point, but I mean, it was so much fun. I was so excited that happened, you know, because like I said, it was a pipe dream, mm-hmm. and so to be able to hit that mark was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I would say I can imagine, but I almost can't. You know, it's I'm right there, probably where you were, where it is still a pipe dream for me, and I'm on that trajectory of like, I need to get, you know, 15 years older and you know, a little bit faster, and my time and my age group will finally meet in the middle, and hopefully be able to qualify at that point. But what was your race in Boston like? Well, first, I guess I'm going to assume that you went and ran the race. Did you? And how was the experience?
Yeah. So I did run the 2013 Boston Marathon, which, as we all know, ended up being the bombing year. Mm-hmm. And so the race itself, I was incredible. It was overwhelming. You know, until you've done it, it's so hard to explain that environment. From the moment I stepped off the plane, it's just electric there. They embrace that marathon so much that, I mean, you just feel like a rock star when you're walking around town if you're part of that marathon. And this is even, you know, this was in 2013 when, you know, it wasn't as widely known. And so, I mean, just that feeling was amazing, you know. And there's, you know, it's funny, there's as you're working your way around the city and riding around mass transit, everybody from, you know, the locals to the other runners, they, you know, there's always there seemed like there were a few questions that came up every time. It was, where did you qualify at? And what's your bib number? And so I remember being like, why is everybody asking what the bib number is? Until now, you know, I realized soon after that is you know, that those bib numbers are ordered in order by your qualifying time. So I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a whole new competition within the competition. But it was incredible. So, you know, just even before the race, it was overwhelming. And then the day of the race, it was, you know, a beautiful day. I didn't have my greatest race. FYI, if you don't already know, Boston is tough. I remember looking at that course thinking, oh my gosh, downhill, this is going to be a breeze, until I got to about mile 16 and my quads felt like jello. And then you start the uphills. But I mean, just going back, the environment is just electric. I mean, 3, 4, 5 people deep for the entire course. They're going nuts, you know, all day long. It was just an incredible experience. And I was lucky enough to where I came in ahead of the bombings by like 20 or 25 minutes. And so, you know, I remember I had just gotten my drop bag and met up with my husband and brother and sister-in-law, and we were about a block and a half away from the finish line, and we heard we heard the bombs. At the time, we didn't know what it was. We thought it was maybe a cannon or something. And we had gone down into the T, the subway system, just as we saw cop cars flying that way. And then, you know, of course, you know, we get to the financial district where we're staying, and we get out of the subway system. And that's where, you know, all hell broke loose, you know, just, you know, for lack of better words. And we kind of started realizing what was going on. So that post Boston experience was quite different than what I think you'd get in a normal day. And we were still in town, I think, until the day before the city got, you know, shut down for that chase. And I mean, it was probably, you know, as we're doing our tourist things, you know, there's cops on every corner with M16s, and so I mean, it was just a little different experience. And someday, when I'm not trying to run so fast, and I don't want to don't mind taking on the challenging course, I'd love to go back and have a different post-race experience than I did that year.
Yeah, that was I was leading to that, and you beat me to the punch. So definitely would be open to the idea of running Boston again.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, yeah, I mean, that's, it's such a great race, but like I said, it's a hard course, and I'm trying to run really fast yet. So
it's not a PR course, that's for sure.
It can be, I suppose, but not the way I ran it.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess at least you make an argument that any course could be a PR course, but that one's not really set up to be. For a lot of people to have, and I mean, from what I hear, you know, from other runners and things like that, it's definitely not the race that a lot of people, you know, obviously there's plenty that re-qualify there, but it's not the race that people go into going, this is going to be the fastest race I've ever run most of the time.
Right. And even if you do go in there with a goal, I remember I had, I don't even remember what my goal was going in there. But I remember quickly just being like, I don't even care how fast I run. I'm going to take this all in because, you know, like I said, it's just such a cool environment. And yeah, once you're there, I think it's hard to stay focused on a stern goal, because you just want to take it all in. Especially if you worked really hard to get there.
Right, right. And that's always been my plan, but it's one of those things, like, I don't know exactly how I'd respond, obviously, until you get into that situation. But my plan has always been, you know, whenever it is that I qualify and get to go run the race, it's going to be like, I'm just going to take my sweet time. I'm going to, you know, high five all the kids and just enjoy, stop for selfies and photos and just have a blast. And who cares what the clock says? Cause I'm not going to win that much for sure. So might as well just take my time and enjoy it since yeah, I mean, that's been and will continue to be the goal for however long it takes. So, you know, might as well get as much time on the course as possible.
Right.
For you with that kind of mindset, or that was kind of the idea when you got there, was that hard for you with your competitive nature to kind of turn it off for that race, or at least dial it down a little bit and just theoretically go out there to just kind of have some fun and enjoy yourself?
You know, it wasn't terribly hard. I know that, I remember starting thinking, if I feel really good, I'm going to go for it. Otherwise, I'm just going to feel good running it. And I think I made a go at it for the first 10 miles, and I'm like, you know, this is, you know, just not going to happen. It's not one of those, you know, everything's going to be perfect sort of days. And so it was, you know, after 10 miles that I just started taking it all in.
I want to shift gears a little bit, Amy, but first, I want to take a second and pay a couple bills and thank Knucklelights again for sponsoring today's episode of the show. You know, with it being around the holiday season, if you're looking for a good gift to put on your list, or just something that's actually a useful gift, because Lord knows, at least in my family, I get a lot of gifts that aren't always the most usable, or always the most things that I'm like, gosh, what am I going to ever do with this thing? You get Knucklelights, a package of Knucklelights in your stocking or under the tree, and it's going to be something you can use, because, you know, if you got a busy life, you got to run early, you got to run late, and this time of year it's dark early, and it gets dark and it stays dark late in the morning. So, you know, it's helpful to be out there, be able to see where you're going and let cars see if you're running on the roads, things like that. And if you don't like having a headlamp on, which I'm not the biggest fan of. It's nice to have a light that you can use, but still have your hands free. And that's what knuckle lights do. They just strap around the outside of your hands, shine the light down. You can see right where you're going. And they're really, really not obtrusive at all. So if you're interested in more or checking out more information about them, get yourself a pair or put them on your Christmas list. Knucklelights.com is the website. And thanks to them for sponsoring the show. And if you get yourself a pair, let them know where you heard about them so that, you know, that they can, maybe keep that relationship going into the new year as well. So, Amy, we talked kind of a little bit about the early days of your running, kind of getting back into the sport and you know working towards Boston and just sneaking in under the time limit at the time. But since then, things have continued to progress and dare I say rather rapidly, of going from, you know, the time it took you to get from 4 hours to 3:34:56 to where you are now at sub 3 hours. I know from how we got connected from Jay Johnson, who was on the show back in episode 476. He's your coach. You work with him quite a bit, and he's helped you get your training dialed in and get to where you are now. What is working with Jay, you know, how this is going to be a real broad question. We'll kind of narrow it in as we go a little bit, but what is working with Jay or just a coach in general, what has that been for you, or how has that helped you get to where you are at this point in your running career?
You know, it's funny when I tell people I have a coach, the reaction is often, you need a coach to run? Or what does a coach do for running? You know, don't you just go out and run? And, you know, oddly enough, I even get that from fellow runners that, you know, they make those, you know, sort of comments. But, you know, as you know, and probably many of your listeners, a coach is a game changer. I don't think I'd ever go without a coach now. I, you know, no matter what, even if my goals weren't as lofty as they are, just having that comfort of, you know, having someone else handle the training, no more, you know, wondering if I'm doing the right training. Jay just takes care of that part, and I get to go out and do what I love, you know, which is just run. So, you know, you don't have to scour the internet for training plans or, right. You know, it's just there. And I actually enlisted Jay after qualifying for Boston because I was kind of struggling trying to figure out what the next goal could be. You know, and I need those goals to keep motivated to train hard. So I got to that point where I'm like, well, now I qualified for Boston, you know, what's next? And I thought, well, maybe I could try to hit a sub 3:30 marathon. And I thought there was no way I could do that on my own. And so in January of 2013, so, quite a few years ago now, I was not only frustrated with the marathon training process, just because I was often injured. So I would, you know, train, barely make it to the starting line unscathed, and probably had some IT band issue going into a race most of the time. I'd run the marathon, and I'd come out of the marathon so broken after the race that I'd have to take a month off, and then I'd struggle to get back into running. And I figured there had to be a better way, you know, and I loved it so much I was going to find a way to make it better. And so, you know, I've been working with Jay ever since. And so under him, I've gone from that 3:34 marathon to that 2:58. I also went from constantly being injured for many years to training now with minimal setbacks. There's just a plethora of things I've learned from working with Jay. He got me doing the right things. You know, I do the general strength every day. I prioritize sleep. I, you know, active isolated flexibility is a standard in my training. I spend time in the pool. But one of the other big factors I think having a coach does is, and that people don't bring up much, is having that other person, you know, invested in your training and excited to, you know, see you progress. And so when you have someone who has put effort into making you faster and better as a runner, that instills the confidence in you that you can do these really hard things, and you have to believe in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of dynamics and a lot of benefits to having a coach, and obviously as a coach, like I'm gonna be pro coach. I mean, I'm not gonna hide behind that. But you mentioned that, you know, one of the things that I get questions on all the time, and honestly, one of the things that I like to think I'm pretty good at is the injury prevention piece. I mean, my for your benefit, Amy, because I think pretty much everybody that listens probably knows, but my background is in athletic training and sports medicine, and like that's always been my thing. You know, working with injuries, preventing injuries. And like you said, before you started working with Jay, that was a common problem that you had, and a common problem that a lot of runners have, of like, I train for this race and something starts to break down. I finish the race and now I got to put myself back together. What kind of things, and I mean, you know, Jay mentioned the lunge matrix, which is a beautiful thing, a great way to warm up, and the stretching and things like that. But are there any more specific things that has really kind of helped you with the injury situation, or is it just kind of really, is it really as simple as, well, not simple, but is it really as basic as saying you got to do all these different little things and they all kind of play their own little part in preventing the injuries?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, everything plays a part, but I really do think that the general strength work that I do is hands down the best thing for keeping me injury free and strong and stable. If you're curious of what my training looks like, all you have to do is get Jay's book, which is Simple Marathon Training, because that is exactly what I did. But here's the kicker. I dedicated myself to making all that non-running work that he talks about in the book a priority. So it was very clear to me early on in working with Jay that there was a lot of importance on the general strength. So I made sure that I got it done every single day, not just when I had time. And he made it easy. You know, there was some struggles before that I had with general strength about, you know, when I should do it, because, you know, I hesitated to, you know, do general strength before a big run because I didn't want my legs to be tired for it. And, you know, by the time I got done with the run, I'm like, oh, I'm too tired to do the general strength. But he just kind of laid things out in such a way where, you know, every day before a run, you're doing the lunge matrix. Every day after, you know, after an easy run, there's some easier general strength. He has what he calls SAM, strength and mobility videos that he has out on YouTube, I believe. But that's the work I do. It's all basically a lot of body weight work. So I don't ever set foot in a gym, which I think is the other reason I've stuck to it, because I can walk in the door from my run and I can get all of the general strength done. And, you know, like I said, I do it every day, and it's anywhere from 15 minutes of work after an easy run to all the way up to 40 minutes after a hard run or a long run. I've added in over the years. So once I've progressed, I, you know, now do a little bit of medicine ball work and quite a bit of kettlebell work as well. But I, you know, I'll cut a run short before I'd skip doing the general strength, just because I know how important that is and in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. And I don't want to, well, I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say other than like that point is so important, that, you know, we as runners so often get stuck in like, oh, I have to get to X mileage. And you know, what you just said, that you'd cut your run short to make sure you're taking care of the strengthening and the mobility and the other things, is the exact opposite of how a lot of runners think. And I just want to emphasize that point that, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, when you made that shift and you bought into that philosophy, that the injuries went down, the performance improved, you know, because that stuff is that important, and it's more important than one extra mile or an extra half a mile or whatever it is that you're cutting your run short, so that you have that little bit of extra time to do those little things that are, you know, important things as well.
Right. Yep. And I, the other thing that comes to mind with what Jay has helped me with that has probably been a game changer is learning how to run off of feel. That's been huge. I used to, before I started working with Jay, I would go out and try to hammer it on every single run because I figured if I wasn't running hard, I wasn't making gains. Mm-hmm. I also had the gross misunderstanding of pacing. I recall thinking, man, if I can't even hold a pace for a 4-mile training run, how would I ever be able to run that pace for a 10K race? And this is funny because, now I do, 20-mile training runs with 10 to 12 miles at marathon pace. And I'd be, I'm really pumped if I can hold that marathon pace for that many miles. Whereas, go back 7 years and I would have been like, oh my gosh, I got to completely reassess my goals because, this isn't going to work. It's funny. I go back to, I remember when I brought on Jay, one of the things I thought is, oh my gosh, this is going to be fantastic. No more worrying about pace because I have this coach. He's going to, give me an assignment and he's going to tell me exactly what pace to run for every single run. And you can imagine my disappointment when I got my first schedule and, it had stuff like run 45 minutes at an easy pace or, and I'm like, well, what is easy pace? Or, he'd assign, I remember he probably did like a fartlek workout right away. And the two alternating paces were comfortably hard and steady. And I'm like, I have no idea what those paces should be. And I think I even asked him, I'm like, for some specific paces and he did the complete right thing. He just kind of, explained to me that, that easy pace, I should be able to talk in paragraphs and, describe the feeling rather than saying, you should go out and run, 9 minutes to 9:30 pace, or something like that. And that was probably one of the biggest helps to my progression as well is because it allowed my easy days to be easy and my hard days to be hard.
Yeah, I'm laughing again to myself because I've had the same conversations with folks where it's like what is easy? Like give me a number. And I'm like, no. Like, cause some days 9 minute pace might be easy. And some days you might be 10:15 to be easy just based on how you're feeling that day, what your body's going. Like there's too much of a variable on easy to try to pin it down and say that that's always and forever going to be your easy pace. It's just not quite how it works.
Right. But our, the type A runners, we want to have, those numbers and that data, and I think one trick, if you're struggling to just run off of feel, one thing I did do when I was trying to get myself to not pay attention, especially on my easy days, to the pace so much and tune in more to how I was feeling is I wouldn't leave the watch behind because the data geek in me just can't live without those metrics, but I would put the watch on and I would put it on upside down. So I wouldn't be tempted to take a look at those paces or those splits. So, that was fun. And one of the fears, I suppose, with not being able to look at your watch, especially on like a hard day or a workout day is, at least for me, the fear was I wouldn't run as fast as I thought I should. And I had actually the exact opposite thing happen when I stopped looking at my watch is I would get done with a harder workout and I'd look at my paces and I'd be blown away. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if I had been looking, I would go into a workout with a preconceived notion of what my paces should be. And I probably would have scaled things back in order, because I would see a split come up and think, my gosh, there's no way I could sustain this. And I'd probably tell myself to slow down. Whereas if I'm not looking at those paces, I just go out and run on how it feels. And it was a great feeling to be able to surprise myself. Now, that didn't happen every time, right, but I can say, most of the time it did.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it's hard to believe until you've experienced it. And then all of a sudden, like, the light bulb goes on and it's like, oh, this, I'm really like this too, because I've heard, you know, lots of people say that, and it still can be tough to try until you do. And then you're like, oh yeah. Like, it's, there's something about just listening to your body and, you know, going with, like you said, run, like Jason, like a lot of people say, run how you feel, or run at the appropriate level of what your body's telling you, what you're feeling. And, yeah, you might surprise yourself sometimes if you try that.
Right. Yep. And then the other thing is, where I live, which is in Southwest Minnesota, the land of extremes, you know, it's often, the weather prevents me from being able to, you know, hit certain paces versus where I could still hit, you know, certain feelings. So, you know, for instance, in the summer, we have your Florida-like weather where it's 70 degrees and 97% humidity before the sun even comes up, you know. So, and it's not even those temps that are terrible. It's that humidity that kills me. I know Jay tries to make me feel better, and he tells me that running in that humidity is like the poor man's altitude training, but still doesn't make it feel any better.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make it any easier, but it definitely does pay off. When the temperature drops a little bit, the humidity goes back to normal. You do feel a little bit more pep in your step. But Amy, as we're getting towards the end here, I do want to shift one more time if we can, because one of the things that mentioned in the intro is you know, just how you know, how busy you are, how busy all of us are. I mean, work and life and family and the whole nine yards. We all have a dozen plates in the air at any one moment that we're trying to juggle. And yet you've obviously found ways that work for you to balance it all, still be able to put in lots of time and effort into your training, which obviously has paid off. You know, the dividends are clear to see. And I know, sometimes myself and a lot of times, you know, people I work with, people I just interact with on social media and whatnot, you know, it's like, oh man, if only I could have a few more hours in the day to do X, Y, and Z so that I could also still run and still do all these other things. What would have been a few things that you've done or that you've found that really help you to you know, get all the important things in your life taken care of, you know, the work and the family and the running and the rest. You talked about rest. You know, that's a lot of runners burn the candle on both ends. They don't go out to bed early, got to get up early to get the runs in, and pretty soon like they're breaking down because they don't get any rest. How do you, for lack of a better way of saying it, how do you find time to do all the things?
You've got to be really organized. So you know, I wasn't always so good at like the rest thing, for example. It wasn't until a few years ago I actually started tracking my sleep via an app. And that was probably one of the greatest things I did, because it made it very clear that I was not getting enough sleep. I was maybe at that point getting 5 or 6 hours of sleep a night. And you know, I quickly realized that that's definitely not enough. So that made me more aware. And so what I started doing was, organizing my, well, I should just back up. I'm kind of a computer geek, so the computer geek in me is going to shine through here. So I took it so far as to make my own little program where I plug in my run time, what my general strength is, and it spits out what time I should be getting to bed, what time I need to be out of bed, and in order to accommodate, you know, a good night's sleep. And I'm proud to say, I've gone from, you know, someone who gets 5 to 6 hours of sleep to 7.5 is now my average. So still could be better, but I mean, I think you just need to be organized, because otherwise it gets to be 10 o'clock and you realize, oh, I got to get up at, you know, 4:30 or 5 to get a run in. And at that point, it's too late to get a good night's sleep. But the other thing, I used to be a runner in the evenings, and I did change to being a morning runner, which, I mean, if you're struggling to find time to fit in a run, I think that's the best way to get around that issue. There's way less things that are going to get in the way of a run at 4 o'clock in the morning versus 4 o'clock in the afternoon or in the evening after you're tired and you've been, you know, helping your kids with homework and so forth. So, I do get up very early in the morning. So, you know, depending on, what type of workout I have, I'm up between 4 and 4:30, or even sometimes for the big workouts before 4, to get my run in and get to work and get the kids off to school and so forth. But I also think, and I do the same thing on the weekend too. I'll get it in early. And one of the reasons for that is I made a conscious effort to make sure that my running, my hobby, didn't affect my family negatively. And I think that's been the key to having their support. So like on the weekends, I figure out what we have going on as a family and I back it down from there. And often, you know, I'm done with my long run before everybody even gets out of bed. Mm. So they are not affected by it, and I think that's one of the keys to having their support and have them enjoy my running as much as I do.
Yeah, make it clear that running is important, but it's not more important than the family. That's a good thing to keep in mind, because if I'm honest, sometimes I might be a little bit guilty of that, where it's like, willing to sacrifice breakfast to go get my run in, and maybe I need to be better about getting up early and making that happen so that I can be home in time for the breakfast on a Saturday or something like that.
Right.
So as we're getting to the end now, Amy, the way I have been ending the chats for the most part for the last year or so is with something I call a philosophical question, which can sometimes sound scary, but it's really not that big of a deal. It's just kind of, you know, a closing bow to that opening question of, you know, something simple, very open-ended, and you can just kind of put whatever spin you want on it. We've had long answers, we've had short answers, we've had everything certainly in between. But I'd just be curious, what does, you know, with where you are now, with where you were, 7-8 years ago as you were getting back into the sport, and even, you know, taking it way back to when you were in high school, the early days of running and to where you are now. What does it mean to you to be labeled to be classified as a runner? When somebody says, you know, it's my friend Amy over there, she's an awesome runner, she's done all these different marathons, all these races. What do you want that label of runner to, what would you be your ideal thing for that to say about you?
Oh man, that's a really good question. You know, one of the things, Denny, that comes to mind is, you know, as a runner, I really think, I think I like that I can call myself a dreamer. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, there's not many things I've found in life that have allowed me to dream quite as much as running has. And it's awesome. You know, I spend so many of my training runs dreaming about that next goal and what it'll feel like to hit that next goal. And what a great way to start the day. I mean, who else can sit there and dream and make those dreams come true? And maybe the other thing is it's kind of uncomfortable sometimes, but I have I've had friends and strangers alike tell me that, you know, I've inspired them. It's uncomfortable because I'm like, well, that's weird. I'm just doing the same thing that, you know, that a ton of other people do. And but I mean, that really, really gives me a good feeling as well, that me as a runner can inspire someone else. And, you know, whatever I can help help any other runner. Like I hope someone, you know, takes something away from this podcast today, that will help them as a runner. It's incredibly exciting that, you can set a goal, no matter what that goal is, and you can dream about it and you can work hard and do all the little things. And it almost seems like the possibilities are endless when you do those things. So it's kind of a beautiful thing about running.
I am not going to agree, and I'm not going to muddy the waters. That's a beautiful way to beautiful definition and a beautiful way to end this episode, I think, as well. So again, guys, on the Instagram, on the Twitter, if you want to say hi to Amy, it's at Amy Feit, AmyFeit. And we'll have everything linked up to you know, her contact information, some of the stuff we talked about, with especially the episode with Jay. If you want to, if you missed that one, you want to catch that one, in the show notes for today's episode, everything will be linked. Dizruns.com/497. So, Amy, thank you so much for taking the time today. I know that you've got a race coming up. I think it'll be a little bit just shortly after this episode goes live. You're training for CIM, so I hope that that goes well for you. And definitely looking forward to following along, see how things go with that race and into 2018 and beyond. But wishing nothing but the best going forward, and thanks again for the time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Amy and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your big takeaway from the things that we talked about today? For me, I think it really kind of comes down once again to the reminder of how important it is to prioritize the little things. You know, Amy made this huge jump in her performance. And I mean, let's not kid ourselves. A jump from, you know, a 30-minute jump from 3:30 to sub 3 hours. That's impressive. Not that a 30-minute jump anywhere else isn't impressive. That's a big substantial gain. But when you start getting, you know, faster and faster and faster, those gains become smaller and smaller just because the physiological room to improve continues to shrink. And boy, to go from a 3:35 or 3:34 high to a 2:58, that is impressive. And what was one of the big keys that helped trigger her to make that improvement was that focus on doing the little things, that focus on the strength training, that focus on the stretching, the mobility, the getting enough sleep. And obviously her relationship with Jay and her coaching, you know, the fact that she bought into whatever her coach was telling her, that helped. But, you know, she still had to prioritize those things. She still had to make them important. And like she said, you know, she'll cut a run short before she'll sacrifice those little things. And you know, as much as I call them the little things, those little things make a big difference. So if you're not on board the strength training bandwagon yet and making it a consistent part of your training, whether it's every day, whether it's two or three times a week, but consistently two or three times a week, you know, you can have some arguments there on the details, but don't lose sight of the forest for the trees. Strength training is important. You want to stay healthy. You want to improve. You got to make it part of your routine. And I mean, like in every, you know, a regular consistent part of your routine, just like your regular consistent training runs, strength training is important too. And also obviously the other little things, the stretching, the foam rolling, eating well, getting enough sleep, all of those things, they impact your performance. So if you're serious about getting better as a runner, whether you work with a coach or not, whether that fits in the budget, there's no reason that strength training in your living room can't fit in the budget. Like, that stuff's free. So make it happen. Make it a priority. And don't wait for 2018. Start now. Get that part of the routine between now and the end of the year so that when the new year hits, you are ready to go from the drop. Strength training, stretching, foam rolling, eating well, getting plenty of sleep, all those things are now, they're not optional. They're part of the routine. They're part of what's going to help you make 2018 your best year of running ever. So that was my takeaway slash my little bit of chance to climb up back on the soapbox and preach to y'all a little bit. Hopefully you take it as it's meant to be, and it's just an encouragement to focus on those little things. But like I said, that was my takeaway. What about you? Maybe something else from our conversation stood out to you. So I'd love to know what that is. Let me know in on the Twitters at DizRuns. Shoot me a tweet. You can also send me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And you can always head over to the show notes for this episode or any episode and leave a comment there letting me know what your takeaway was in the show notes again for this episode, DizRuns.com/497. So that is just about it today. But before we officially put a bow on this thing, just want to remind you one more time, Knuckle Lights. See and be seen. They're good things. They're a good product. And now they got color ones out too. So you can get the colorful knuckle lights. You can get the standard knuckle lights. They're all good. They all help you to see where you're going and help cars to see you, which is just a big safety thing. We want you to be healthy. We want you to be safe out there. We want you to get back home in one piece, because let's not kid ourselves. If you run into a car, the car is going to win every single time. So get those lights so that the cars see you, the drivers see you. I guess the cars really aren't doing the seeing, but so the drivers see you, and they give you plenty of space out there the rest of this year and into the new year as well. So with that, now we'll officially put a bow on this thing. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, always feedback's always appreciated. And also, please don't be afraid to spread the word. Post it on Facebook, Twitter, wherever, social medias, emails, blog posts, whatever. All of that that recommendations, all of those recommendations are very much appreciated, and they really do move the needle. They mean a lot more to me than you might realize. So you know, thank you to everybody who's recommended the show, posted about the show, and you know, thank you in advance for those that will continue to do that. So with that, let's call it a day, shall we? Hope you have a great rest of your day. And if I can ever do anything for you, please reach out and let me know. You know all the channels to get in touch with me. Always happy to help and offer advice as needed. So until next time, please take care, please be well, and we'll talk soon. See you guys.